This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The congressman from Iowa, Steve King, by the way, in the previous hour, if you missed it, we had a debate with Eric Caron, a former U.S. special agent and diplomat and author, and he was saying basically that we need to secure the border on the southern frontier, as it were, because killers and rapists are coming across. And I just asked the simple question, you know, if you were somebody who wanted to kill people, you got a kick out of that. Or if you were somebody who wanted to rape people, that was your thing, and you were in Mexico, why would you want to come to the United States, where it's much harder to do and much easier to get caught? Why not take the low-hanging fruit in Mexico? But if you've decided, no, I only want to kill and rape Americans, why wouldn't you just cross at the border, at the legal crossing places? Or why wouldn't you get on a plane in, you know, one of those cities in Mexico, you know, fly from Cancun to Los Angeles? I mean, there's direct flights every day, right? Why wouldn't you do it the way that, oh, and then the other argument he made was, you know, we need to, you know, 9/11 taught us that we need to keep these people out. Well, all 19 of the 9/11 hijackers came here on airplanes with visas, you know, student visas, work visas, tourist visas, but they all came here legally. Yes, they overstayed their visas, and, you know, we should do something about that. But what does that have to do with the wall on the southern border again? So anyhow, apropos of that, I mean, the bottom line is that the whole wall on the southern border thing is really not about immigration. And it's really not about crime. What it's really about is that the United States of America is getting browner. And white supremacists, white nationalists, white terrorists have been freaked out about this for a long time. Louise and I went to, you know, back when we lived in Atlanta, in Georgia. This was like in the 1980s. I forget which election cycle it was, but Pat Buchanan was running for president. It was in the Republican primary, and he was grabbing some traction. And we took our kids. Our youngest was she was small enough that she sat on my shoulders. I think she was maybe two. And we took our kids to this, and before we went, we said, you know, what you're going to probably see here, maybe nothing, or this may be the kind of rally that you would have seen in Germany in 1932. And so I'd just like to show it to you. And sure enough, we got in there. They locked the doors, or they made it very difficult to get in or out. The security was bikers and skinheads with swastikas. The guy who introduced Pat Buchanan went on a long rant about the Jewish bankers controlling the world. Pat Buchanan continued that, but instead of saying Jewish bankers, he kept using the phrase, those people. I mean, there's a long province to this, right? This idea that people who are not, quote, us, are the ones coming to get us. And the latest, and using that, using the us and them, to essentially instill fear in people. This is one of the triggers that is wired into us as mammals, and certainly as primates. We see this in other primate populations. Chimpanzee troops will go to genocidal war with each other. It was Jane Goodall who documented this. And this was literally one troop that had previously split into two. So this is wired into us. We have to realize that war is not an aberration, it's an expression of something that's deep in our genetic code, that at some point in time was some kind of a survival advantage for our species. But right now, with 7 billion people on the planet, well, I'd say actually not just right now, but for at least the last 10,000 years, has not been so useful to us, particularly when you combine it with the agricultural revolution and technology. Go back and read Dan Quinn's book, Ishmael, if you want to know what I'm talking about there. So we're wired to be freaked out about the other. We're wired to react to the other in ways that include violence. In fact, we're wired to even kill the other if we feel genuinely threatened, or to cheer it on, as we do as we watch the bombing of cities in the Middle East, for example. In Iraq and Afghanistan, we were all, yeah, drop those bombs, and you know, absolutely innocent people were being slaughtered, as George W. Bush declared two unnecessary and illegal wars in the Middle East, both of them based on lies. Afghanistan was not responsible for Osama bin Laden. And in fact, they offered to arrest him and turn him over to a third country. And George W. Bush said, no, I'd rather have a war. I mean, you know, keep in mind, he told his biographer, Mickey Herskowitz, in 1999, that if he became president, he was going to have a war. And it wasn't going to be a short war like his daddy had. He was going to have a long war because that's how you get reelected. And Donald Trump was paying careful attention. He's getting ready for his war in Venezuela. You mark my words. So into this room, this basement with 2 inches of gasoline on the floor, right, standing in gasoline up to our ankles, holding a matchbook, into this room steps Representative Steve King of Iowa. With an online meme, with an internet meme, with a picture made up of two cartoon characters that look like two human beings, and they're made up of blocks that are essentially the states, the red states and the blue states. So you got a red person and a blue person, and they're punching each other. And he comes out with this meme that says there's 8 trillion bullets out there on one side. And who's going to win the Civil War? Civil War? Really? I mean, this is Steve King, Congressman Steve King, who used to come on this program. He's been unwilling to for some years now. I wonder why. Who is just like this unrepentant, open racist, suggesting that we should have a civil war in the United States and that the side that has the most guns is going to win. This is absolutely unhealthy. You know, 1 trillion bullets is a lot of death, and pointing out that one side is well-armed while the other side isn't, pointing that out to deranged people, like the terrorists who shot up Christchurch, New Zealand, or the hate-filled bigots who've been murdering people in the United States for years, just pointing that out to them. Some among them are going to take that as a call to arms. You know, we've already suffered one brutal civil war. And a lot of people died. 600,000 people died in that Civil War. And what happened after the Civil War? Well, there were still a bunch of people in the House of Representatives who thought the Confederacy was just a fine thing. And how did the House of Representatives deal with them? These people who were still willing to fight the Civil War? They expelled them. I'm calling on Nancy Pelosi and the leadership of the Democratic Party in the U.S. House of Representatives, since they control the House, to begin expulsion hearings. To begin hearings to determine whether Steve King should be expelled from the U.S. House of Representatives for promoting a civil war. You think what Ilhan Omar said was a bad thing? This is mind-boggling. A civil war in the United States, encouraging Americans to take up weapons against other Americans? I mean, how does it get worse than this? And this is a Republican that the rest of the Republicans are saying, well, yeah, he's here. I mean, we're kind of embarrassed by him, but you know, we kind of agree with him. Come on, guys. In fact, it shouldn't even be Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership saying it's time to expel Steve King from the U.S. House of Representatives. It should be the Republicans. If they have any courage, if they have any belief in the ideals of this country, they should be calling for this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hell, if they have any understanding of the horrors of a civil war, they should be calling on Steve King to be expelled. And welcome back. Chris in Irvine, California. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thank you. I wanted to make a couple of points about the demonization of South American immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I wanted to correct you if I could. When you use the term illegal aliens, that's a dehumanizing.
I agree,
kind of language.
When I'm using my own language with my own people, I will say undocumented. You know, people who are undocumented undocumented immigrants.
Yeah.
Well, they're technically not an immigrant if they haven't applied for immigration status. But you know, undocumented aliens, undocumented persons. You know, I get that, and I've gotten that for years and years. But you know, if somebody's using that language, I'm going to use that language back, so that they get my point, rather than trying to just get into semantics with them.
So my second point. So even if we could stop all future criminals, if we could foresee the future and say, you know, if at some point you're going to rape somebody, stop all future criminals from entering the U.S., we wouldn't make a dent in the violence that exists in this country, because we American citizens, homegrown, are more violent than they are.
Yeah, one of the numbers that is lacking, and it's probably out there, and I just have missed it, Chris, but. And if anybody has it, you know, on the tip of their tongue or knows where to find it, send it to us. Is what percentage of crime in the United States is committed by people who are here without documentation? I'm guessing it's.
But we do know that they're statistically less violent than we are.
That's right.
And there's so little concern by these people about the white supremacist shooters and other homegrown violent criminals that we foster here.
Right. So
that it's racism that's underlying the motivation and not actually safety of the public.
Right. So if we have, say, 11 million people here without documentation, there's 340 million people roughly in the United States. You know, 11 million people is, what is that as a percentage? 3%?
I'm not a math person.
Yeah, I am not either, unfortunately. I think that's roughly 3% of the population of the United States is people who are here without documentation. And if they were committing crimes at the same rate as actual American citizens, you would have 3% of our crime rate caused by those folks. And I'm guessing that it's less than 1%.
Yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that the legitimate insecurities and fears that people have about the state of the world and our future are being hijacked and directed into racism by the right-wing media.
Yes.
And that's why it falls apart the moment you start to question, because it really just comes down to racism. They're no more violent than American citizens are.
Yeah.
So,
and racism comes down to hate and fear, this kind of born at the hip, these twins, you know, these twin emotions that feed each other. And, you know, you throw out some hate and then you throw out some fear and then you throw out some hate and then you throw out some fear. And they kind of bind in I believe it's the amygdala, you know, the fight or flight part of the brain. They both have the same effect. And Trump is, you know, he telegraphs the hate and he explicitly proclaims the fear. And,
yeah, well, it goes back way before Trump
obviously.
You know, Rupert Murdoch has been making millions off of this his whole life, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but thank you.
You know, it goes back to yellow journalism in the United States. I mean, it goes back to the founding of the Republic. It goes back to John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Act, Chris. Chris, I got to run. I'm sorry. But thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's coming up on 20 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, Frank, in Caldwell, Idaho. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
I was wanting to talk to you about this open borders garbage you're talking about. If they're going to have the civil war, it's going to be because of people like you.
I don't know anybody who's advocating open borders, Frank. Do you? Can you name one person?
Well, yeah,
I do know one person who's in favor of open borders. Ron Paul. The libertarians believe that there should be no borders to labor, that anybody should be able to work anywhere in the world. So, and the libertarians are a subset of the Republican Party. So Ron Paul and Rand Paul are in favor of open borders. But I don't know of any Democrat who is. Do you?
You sound like you are.
I'm not in favor of open borders. I said just a few minutes ago on this program, if you don't have borders and you don't defend your borders and you don't have citizenship and you don't use citizenship, you don't have a country.
Well, then why are you defending the illegals being here?
I am. What I'm saying, Frank, is that the argument from the last hour, this guy came on and he said, you've got people who are coming into this country and they are working illegally and some of them are committing crimes. And therefore, we need to build a wall. And what I said to him was, Building a wall is not going to stop criminals from coming into the United States, and it's not going to stop people who come here to work. You want to stop people who are coming here to... Let me finish my sentence, Frank. You want to stop people who are... And I'll let you talk. You want to stop people who are coming here to work? Start throwing rich white employers in jail like we did before 1986 when Reagan stopped doing that. That'll stop people from coming here to work if there's no work for them, number one. And number two, if you want to stop criminals, build your criminal justice system. The worst thing you can do if you want to stop criminals, particularly among the community of undocumented immigrants, is the worst thing you can do is to say that we're going to send ICE in if you call and try to turn in your neighbor who's in the process of robbing somebody's house. Frank, if a person in this country without documentation, if what you would call an illegal alien, was in this country and they were breaking into your house right now, and one of your neighbors was also an illegal immigrant, would you want them to be afraid to call 911 and turn that person in because they were afraid that ISIS was going to show up?
Neither one of them should be here. I had my father killed by the illegal. I had a nephew killed by an illegal.
I agree that people who are not citizens in this country should not be here without a visa, without some sort of documentation. They should not be here illegally.
I believe we should deport every one of them.
You know, fine. Good luck. You know, that is not... You started out by saying that I'm here supporting open borders. No, I'm not, Frank.
Well, they don't call them undocumented. Call them what they are. They're illegals.
They're performing an illegal act by being here. You can use that language if you want. It doesn't matter, Frank, what language we're using. What we're talking about here are human beings on the one hand and policies that make countries or don't make countries on the other hand. You can't... This is why I think, and I realize that, Steve Bannon is essentially saying this same thing, but I think that it's true that when Europe did the Schengen zone and they said, okay, anybody can travel from any country to any other country, anybody can work in any country, we're basically not going to have countries anymore, we're going to call it the Eurozone, that was a prescription for disaster because individual countries couldn't control their labor forces. It wasn't about race, although that's the way that Bannon is playing it. It wasn't about religion, although that's the way Bannon is playing it. It's about economics. And exactly what I was predicting would happen back 20 years ago when they initiated this stuff is what has happened. People from the poorest countries in Europe are flooding the wealthy countries in Europe, and now people in the wealthy countries in Europe are starting to react to that economic hurt. And then people like Steve Bannon come along and say, oh, it's the brown people, don't you know? Just like white people in America are responding to Ronald Reagan's policies of deunionizing the country, of wiping out the unions. You know, when Reagan came to office, a third of America was unionized, which meant two-thirds of working people in America had the equivalent of a good union job with good pay, paid vacations, pension plans, health benefits, the whole thing. And Reagan destroyed that. Reaganism has completely destroyed this.
Let's get back to our conversation.
And as a consequence of that, you got a lot of people who are scared to death, and then bigots come along and say to these people like, these scared white people, say to them, well, you know who's taking your job? It's that brown guy from Mexico. That's who you should hate.
Be here.
Exactly. But who's hiring him? It's a rich white guy. It's a rich white guy. It's Donald Trump at the Doral Country Club hiring people from out who are not here with documentation. It is Donald Trump's big donors in the construction industry who are hiring people here without documentation. It's Donald Trump's big.
What does that have to do with our conversation?
What's our conversation, Frank?
Our conversation is get rid of the illegals and quit supporting them being here. They're illegals. They are foreigners in America. They have no right to be here.
If you want somebody who came to this country for a job not to be here, take away the job.
I don't want them. I don't want them. They need to be ran out of this country.
So, Frank, join my call to start putting people like Donald Trump and Don Trump Jr., who had years of text message correspondence with a guy who was in this country without documentation, running his country club. Put those people in prison. Join my call to put Donald Trump Jr. in jail right now for hiring people who are here without documentation. Will you do that, Frank?
Why are we talking about Trump? We're talking about illegals.
I'm talking about rich white guys who are exploiting people who are just desperate to get a better job, who are trying to improve themselves. Frank, I get it. We'll be back. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Stick around. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
By the way, and Frank, if you're still listening, just I know this will shock you, but the largest percentage of people who overstay their visas in the United States are Canadians. Well, they're calling it the Freedom Caucus coup. Joan McCarter over at the Daily Kos. Apparently, Mick Mulvaney has become the permanent White House chief of staff, and he has installed eight of his Freedom Caucus crazies. The Freedom Caucus is, I refer to them as the Cokehead Caucus. That's basically that group of right-wing Republicans in the House of Representatives who are heavily supported by the Koch brothers and their little network. Bizarre stuff. Steve in Albuquerque. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom. I've lived in a border state, New Mexico, for most of my life. I'm your age. And I'd like to address people like Frank that you just spoke with when it comes to the political and financial benefits of wealthy people in this country that have been hiring these people for most of my life. I've worked with these people that don't speak English. They've been hired by state and local governments, whether they're truck drivers, carpenters, landscapers, working to plant the fiber optics that they're upgrading with the phone companies and the computer companies. It's just saturated, and it's been going on most of my life that I've lived here.
Ever since 1986, when Reagan stopped enforcing the law against hiring people who are undocumented, threw the doors open.
It coincides with a little Cuba in Miami when Castro released all of the people from his prisons and stuff and allowed them to migrate to America. This is always to keep the working man down, provide plenty of cheap labor. These people, they will work hard and they will provide a lot of profit for the white contractors that hire them.
Right, and by and large, they're good and decent people. And we do need immigration into the United States. Right, you know, prior to the Trump administration, we had averaged around 1 million illegal immigrants a year. That's what we've been averaging for the last couple of decades. And Trump, I guess, has cut that back substantially. But it seems like at 1 million immigrants a year, we're in a comfortable place. You know, but and we need comprehensive immigration reform to make all this work. But, you know, the way that Reagan's set us on this path is not good for us. It's not good for the immigrants.
Well, even with NAFTA and even before NAFTA, they come up and down the main highways to bring produce from Mexico. Do you know how much produce we buy from them? It's amazing.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
I mean, so it's a benefit financially, and it's benefit for the political right because they can have a contractor who's white hire two or three dozen of these guys to build homes and landscape them and do all the work, and they write it off as expenses, and they pay them under the table.
Right, and who keeps the profit? The rich white guy. Yeah,
you got
exactly.
Thank you, Tom.
Steve, thank you for the call. And you know, anyway, Rudy in Riverdale, Georgia. Hey, Rudy, what's up?
He knocked it out of the park. The guy before me, because when I listen to people like Frank, this is where we are. We have to keep fighting and try to keep educating people because, Tom, I travel to the heart of Florida every week, twice a week. And when I tell you that in the heart of Florida, there are more Mexicans than white people, believe me, these people are picking oranges, peppers, everything, Tom, and I can count on one hand the number of white people that I see out in those fields.
Yep.
So I'm just saying. I mean,
right, and the response to that, Rudy, from the Republican right, this is from like the Eisenhower right, has always been, but you know, if we actually had American citizens picking these crops, we would have to pay them more, and then the price of food would go up. And my response to that is, okay, fine, so the price of food goes up. Let's raise the minimum wage and make people, everybody, able to afford food. But we shouldn't be depending for our food upon an exploited class of people, whether they're indigenous citizens, whether they're people who are born in this country, or whether they are, immigrants from another country. Just, the idea of creating an economic system that depends on the exploitation, and then a double level of exploitation. If somebody's in this country without documentation, they're scared to death constantly, right? And so the employer has even more power over them. It's just wrong.
It's sad, Tom, because the guy you had on, I think it was yesterday, and he was explaining basically white America just going to have to stop being lazy and just stop taking for granted their freedoms, because what's going to eventually happen is every freedom that a white man has ever fought for, he's going to eventually lose it the way he's conducting himself right now.
It certainly seems to be going in that direction, Rudy.
You can't have it both ways.
Yep.
You can't, I mean, you're just going against the law of gravity. You can't have it both ways.
Yep. And I think this is, you know, this is one of the lessons that the world learned from, you know, South Africa, the experience of South Africa. And, you know, we need to get this behind us. I saw that Elizabeth Warren has started talking about reparations, that we need to have a serious conversation in this country about reparations. We need to clean up our past. And then we also yeah. need to be dealing with our present. And both of those, you know, whether in the present, I'm talking about this thing about people from south of the border coming here, whether as refugees or whether to work, being demonized by Fox News and by the President of the United States. All of that stuff has racism at its core, and we need to clean that stuff up. Rudy, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Gabe in Glen Ellen, Illinois. Hey, Gabe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you, sir?
I am well. What's on your mind?
I want to answer Mr. Frank or Fred, whatever, talked to you like
Frank.
10 minutes ago. You know, I'm in this country for 25 years. I'm illegal, and I'm white. I'm from Europe. And I feel very bad for all the Mexicans, for all the Latinos, for anyone coming from south of the border, because, you know what, I came 25 years ago because your government let me so easy to come here. I applied. I didn't have even to apply for a visa. I went to the consulate. I say I like to visit the United States. They put me 10 years visa. 10-year visa. I came to United States in 94 to watch the, you know, the soccer in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people. I'm an engineer, construction engineer, and they say, why you go back there? I give you a job here. I have two businesses now.
Wow.
I'm working for union. I have social security. I have pension. I have everything legal, but I'm not legal.
Wow.
And basically,
you're able to get away with that in quotes, and not to cast aspersions on you, Gabe, but essentially because you're white, nobody's noticing you. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's what I want to tell Mr. Fred. You know, most and like you say, a lot of people coming from different country, easy with visa, they stay over the visa, but because they are white, nobody pay attention to them.
Yeah.
I have my social security. I have my driver license in my pocket. I stop with the cops. Cops stop in the street. I talk nice. They talk nice to me. Census in 2000, when the census come to my house and see $500,000 house in Glen Ellen, they told me, citizen, I don't have to tell them yes or no. They said citizen, and they mark themselves on the census, citizen. I was looking to my wife and say, yeah, I'm citizen. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
The races in this country start right when Mr. Trump, you know, took the office, because I never feel, even on my skin, I never feel so bad in this country till now. Now is so much pressure. Now is so much stress. Everybody is angry. Everybody is, you know, it's like you are afraid to talk. If they find a little bit you don't speak correctly English or you don't something, everybody look at you. There was not such a thing before. There was nothing in 2000, 2001, 2003, doesn't matter. I didn't vote. I cannot vote. But there was no stress like now. Now people are getting crazy.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Gabe. They really are.
Thank you very much, Tom.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Tom, for you, for Goldman, for everything, for Michelle in the morning. You guys are great.
Great. Thank you, Gabe.
Keep the good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
I have 1 more year till my daughter is 21, and I will be citizen in 1 year, and
wow.
I'm fine. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Gabe, thank you for the call.
Thank you, sir.
You know, amazing. Lisa in Sutherland, Oregon. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. It's like continuing education with you. You need to be broadcast. You need to have your own show on Fox News. but I kind of think they're scared of you.
Well, that's why they got rid of Alan Combs. They really don't want dissenting voices, unless they're incompetent dissenting voices. And you know, that's the tragedy, that the Democrats that they allow on Fox News tend to be the ones who kind of fall all over their own feet, you know.
Yeah, but, well, you know, I wondered if you could illuminate for me. I'm a little confused about the School of the Americas, where we exported the torture schools in South America. And I'm not sure if it was during the Pinochet regime in Argentina, or during the Iran-Contra.
It was all of the above, Lisa. I would have to go back and check the, you know, Google it to find out when the School of the Americas started. It's near Fort Benning, Georgia, as I recall. And but we have been training allies, the military of allies, I think since the 50s.
Yeah. Well, see, this Amy Goodman spoke of this on her program, and but also I met the photojournalist for the democratically elected Colombian president. His name escapes me now. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned the School of the Americas as one of the primary problems as far as, like, dividing the people, teaching them how to torture their own people, and so on and so forth, and all of the corruption around that. Now, I'm not sure. I think Henry Kissinger might have been the architect, along with...
I think this happened before Kissinger, although he might have weaponized it. But isn't it bizarre that we have an entire school devoted to teaching people from south of the border how to run a military and how to run a police department, but we don't have a school funded by our government, but we don't have a school devoted to teaching them how to run a democracy? I mean, you would think that we would be promoting democratic rather than authoritarian values, but that's not the case, tragically. Lisa, thank you for the call. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're going to check in with Talk Media News in just a second.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Actually, it'll be in 4 minutes. We're going to check in with Talk Media News. And so stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mark, watching Free Speech TV in hot Sulphur Springs, Colorado. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Tom. I've been wanting to call you for a long time, long-time listener. I just wanted to call about the border since we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents bought land on the Mexican border in California in about 1928.
Mm-hmm.
Lived within walking distance of Mexico. I've lived in Arizona. I'm basically on the border my whole life, and I find that basically walking across the border is something that very, very few people do. And right now it's March, and right about now the rattlesnakes will be coming out, and for the next 2 or 3 months, it'll be plumb dangerous out there in the dark.
Mm.
The next thing, aside from that, smuggling, I smuggled when I was a 19-year-old, and we went through a border.
Mm-hmm.
We went right through a crossing. That's the way it's done. I'm a retired gangster, and I'm very retired, but...
So you had some drugs in your pocket or something like that, and because you were a white guy, you just walked through the border. Is that what you're saying, Mark?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we didn't have it in our pocket, but we'd take an ounce across the border at a time, and that made me a nice fat living because I couldn't earn one.
Yeah.
Now, the other side, you've been talking about Ronald Reagan getting the construction unions. I'd spent 10 years struggling in food production, packaging, basically industrial, mechanical.
I'll do it for you.
Yeah, at any rate, I finally found a good job for me. I apprenticed myself as a hot tar roofer in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked like a Marine Corps grunt for 3 years, got my journeyman card, and Reagan got elected.
And that was the end of that,
it was pretty much, it wasn't long.
Yeah.
It wasn't long, and my middle class living that I struggled for so long to get went away.
Oh,
Go ahead.
No, finish yours. It's your story, Mark.
I want to run it down quick, too, because it's, I'm a gabby guy. At any rate, I moved to Arizona because my folks had, because it was cheaper to live there, and it's a right-to-work state. And I went to work there 20 hours a week as a roofer making $6 an hour. Well, I'd been making 21-something in the union.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you earn every penny of that. But be that as it may, I couldn't make a living. I had a guy offer me $1,000 a week. I was living with my parents. $1,000 a week to be his bodyguard.
Hmm.
And he sold drugs to topless dancers.
Wow.
And, I couldn't make a living. I was living with my mom and dad. I said, man, I'm 31 years old. I can't be living with mom and dad.
Yeah.
So I took the job, and it was great, and I did 6 years of that, and then I fell in love, got married, and quit all of that.
So what's the point of this whole story here, Mark?
The point is that, okay, the other point is about the back to the border. MS-13, I remember them tagging in Orange County, California.
Mm. Oh, it's We're a gang that started in Los Angeles. 20. It started in L.A. In the 80s.
Right, and I remember seeing a tag in Placentia, which is just not 20 miles away.
Yeah.
And I wondered, with the MS-13, you know, I was a biker, so 13 was like, that stands for M, which stands for pot, which I wondered who they were.
Never
been really afraid of them in the West.
Yeah. Mark, I gotta pull a plug on this, but thanks for the call. And you know, your story of your union experience, you know, one of my, we used to live in a house with several other people, and one of the people living there was a guy who was a construction worker. He had a great union job. And then along came Reagan, and like you say, that was the end of that. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, a new book by Ellen Ratner. On the line with us is the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, joining us from New York, Luke Vargas. Luke, the British government is facing a Wednesday deadline to agree to a Brexit deal. Increasingly, it seems like what I'm hearing from the European leaders is, you know, Theresa May, now she just got blown up by the Speaker of the House saying, no, you can't have another vote on your new offer, right, to Europe. It's got to be substantially different. And so she's going to Europe saying, we want an extension. A couple of pieces in the Financial Times this morning about how the European leaders are saying, an extension for what? You're not offering anything new. You know, take it or leave it. It's looking to me like a hard Brexit is coming.
Yeah, on a lot of fronts, Theresa May's sort of hope, and there were reasons to suspect it might sort of tip in her favor at the last minute, have come crashing down, though. I mean, first, as you mentioned, you've got the Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, basically saying, you can't just present now for a third time the very same Brexit deal that you proposed back in December.
And he quoted a rule from 1604.
Right. I mean, it has an old precedent, but that doesn't mean it's an...
No, I mean, my point rule. Is a rule that has been followed since 1604.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said for the fact that he maybe could have brought that up several weeks ago when she polished off the same, bill for a second time, and that would have at least sort of, you know, so I kind of sympathize with him because clearly the actions of May's, leadership here reflects a sort of lack of understanding of the process. At the same time, if Bercow was really trying to avoid a crisis, which we're now in, he probably could have, made this, statement several weeks ago and thus...
There's another conspiracy theory floating around here, which is that he stopped her because he knew she was going to lose the vote, and he's on her side, and this was a way of avoiding humiliation for her and losing the vote.
It's hard to see how she doesn't emerge humiliated from this. Her own spokesperson within the last hour or so agreed with the premise of a question saying that now Britain is in a political crisis. I think, and now you point out she's being blocked at the European Union level. The Élysée Palace in France has now put out a statement in the last few hours saying that, look, an extension is not a given. You need to show us that it's not just a delaying tactic and you're not just going to procrastinate for the full duration of a delay. I will point out, and this is probably a relatively low risk, but it is worth thinking about, and I just saw The Brink, the film about Steve Bannon's efforts last night to go around Europe and sort of cultivate far-right populist movements, that there has been a push by people like Nigel Farage and other members of the European Union Parliament from Britain who are in favor of Brexit to try and appeal to Poland and Italy in particular to see that if on Thursday, when the European Union would need to vote and will need a unanimity in order to agree to a possible Brexit extension, that if Poland or Italy, Matteo Salvini's government in Italy is very much aligned with the Brexiteers, if they block that, then it actually almost ensures a no-deal Brexit.
Does the EU work on consensus as opposed to majority?
On this issue, it will. And up until now, that's been working. I mean, even though you do have these sort of far-right governments coming into power whose interests, there are these sort of common interests now across a diverse block of countries, there has been a lot of consensus on Brexit issues so far. So I think that's a relatively low risk, but it's something to think about, that you have a possible scenario here where Italy sort of tries to defend the will of the British Brexiteers by blocking any effort to extend Brexit and work out a better arrangement.
Well, the hard Brexit is in a week and a half, isn't it?
It would be. And mind you, there was a vote last week that basically said, by a narrow margin, no deal Brexit is unacceptable, but it's non-binding. It's not law. And it's possible to see a scenario in which the likelihood of that has actually increased in the past few days. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. We don't know how long Theresa May will ask for a Brexit extension. But mind you, if it's going to be more than several months, she will be forced to hold European Union elections in the United Kingdom, which is sort of insult to injury, and will cost the country upwards of $100 million to put on. And so, she's going to suffer embarrassment no matter how this goes.
Amazing. Meanwhile, yesterday, Mike Pompeo held a press conference, and the only press he invited were faith-based media organizations. Now the question is being asked, how many of them were Muslim? And apparently the answer is zero. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, a great way for the State Department to not have to answer that question is to just say, hey, we're not just going to release the list of call participants. And this is very worrisome. I mean, we've seen a bunch of sort of suspicious things, at least by my account, from the State Department and particularly from Mike Pompeo recently, where he's been doing these American press tours. He spent like the last few days in Nebraska and Oklahoma and Texas, just, you know, calling into local radio shows, talking about barbecue, answering questions about whether he's going to run for president again. And it was all paid for by the State Department and bundled up as public diplomacy, right? He's going to Texas to explain the Middle East peace process to people, to talk about the Iran deal, to educate new audiences about American diplomacy. It looks a little bit like, you know, sort of laying the groundwork for a presidential campaign in the future. And then add to it the fact that this press call yesterday, in a very unprecedented fashion, was reserved for members of the religious press. And that we're not going to learn anything that was said, nor who was participating in that. That's pretty worrisome.
Yeah. I'd be astonished if there was a Muslim or a Hindu or a Jain or any. It's incredible.
We might see some lawsuits here, so the story's not over.
Well, that's good to know. Luke Vargas. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
Luke Vargas with Talk Media News. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.